Welcome back to Master the Marketplace with eTales.
Hi there, and welcome to another episode of Master the Marketplace. Today, we have a special guest on the show, Aaron Snow from Chamberlain. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
It is great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here today. You know, there's a lot going on in the world right now as it relates to COVID-19, as it relates to the coronavirus. And, you know, you, I'm sure, are in the middle of a lot of it. So excited to talk to you about everything that's been happening, how it's affecting your business, both positively, negatively, and have a good conversation today. But Aaron, before we get started, would love for our listeners to just know a little bit about you and your brand. So why don't you just tell us a little more about the Chamberlain brand, and then what do you do for the company?
Absolutely. Yes. So we are Chamberlain's Leather Milk. We are a luxury leather care manufacturer. So we manufacture really high-end leather cleaners and conditioners for the luxury leather care market, whether that's high-end furniture, automobiles, handbags, purses, backpacks, satchels, footwear, all of that. Our products are designed and formulated specifically for those. So we manufacture all of our own proprietary formulas, and we handle a lot of the bottling and everything here in-house, and then distribution as well out of our location here in Fort Worth. I am the director of sales and marketing for the company. I've been here about 5 years, and my real role is we're a small family-owned business. So my role is to make sure that the brand is protected and that the brand is grown as best it can with the resources we have, and that revenue keeps coming in through our various revenue channels. That's kind of a big picture, 1,000-foot view of what my roles and responsibilities are here at Leather Milk.
Got it. And how big is your company right now? How many people in your company?
So we've got about 15 folks on payroll.
I see. Got it. And I'm sure you work with, you know, consultants and other companies and all of that too.
Absolutely. We've got, you know, a dozen or two various independent contractors that do work for us on a monthly basis.
Got it. Perfect. Great. So I like to ask all our guests on the podcast this question. So Aaron, what gets you excited about the retail industry? What do you love about this space? Just love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, for me, my degree's in business management, and obviously there wasn't a huge emphasis on marketing and advertising in my program particularly, but just there was a little bit. But coming into the space, specifically with a brand like Chamberlain's, my favorite thing is that we really can we can do whatever we want if the numbers work right, and we've got to be smart about it. There's really no limit with social media, with technology, with direct to consumer sales, wholesale, international distribution, all the different channels. Like, we really can, if we can keep our brand solid and build a good reputation that people trust. And that's been a challenge, but we've done it. I feel like we've done it pretty well over the last 10 years. When you've got that foundation laid, there, we can sit around and have meetings and brainstorm and come up with the wildest plans. Sometimes they're risky. Sometimes they're not as risky. Sometimes they cost a lot of money. Sometimes they're super organic and they don't. But that's my favorite thing. There doesn't seem to be any limits. We don't have to put handcuffs on. There's obviously some industry things that we have to abide by. But other than that, my favorite thing, what I love the most, is just our ability to go out there, take a really good product with a really good brand and message, and get it into the hands of the consumer one way or another, and then follow that up with great service and continued new product development and launch.
That's fantastic. And you know, that's something that I love about the retail industry as well. I feel like it's one of those industries where you can truly bring out your entrepreneurial spirit. There's just so much going on in the industry. It's changing all the time. And, you know, you can touch literally every aspect of your business when you launch a product, right from, as you rightly mentioned, you know, building your brand to a product launch to supply chain to building your team. I mean, there's just so many things that happen all the time in the retail industry, and it's changing so fast. So I love the entrepreneurial aspect of it. Just my personal opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. I think that because of how I'm wired, if I weren't in this industry, it would be hard for me to stay excited about what I do. But because I'm in this industry, even though it's not my company that I own, because of how I'm wired, I do get to have that outlet within my role here.
Fantastic. Great. Well, this is a good segue then to just dive into a few questions and just chat a little more about your brand and, you know, how you've been growing it. And, you know, I noticed yesterday when I was researching your brand that you've got these amazing videos on YouTube, and, you know, and it brings up the question around just how do brands such as yours, you know, use all these different channels, content channels to create a brand. Could you talk a little bit about just the strategies that you're using as it relates to content creation, you know, whether it's video or text, to just build your brand?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, early on, you know, because we're a small family owned business, we've had to be pretty scrappy. And so, you know, it helped that our owner's brother, he owns a company called Saddleback Leather, which is a high-end luxury leather bag manufacturer. And so our owner developed the leather care products, and right away we had sort of a built-in customer with Saddleback. And Saddleback had a really great reputation. So in some essence, we were able to ride on their coattails for a minute. And then when it turned into when we recognized that we actually were onto something and that we had something really special that people wanted outside of Saddleback sort of following and customer base, is when we had to start saying, all right, how are we going to get this product into people's hands? And, you know, I have to be honest, a lot of it happened by accident. We were really passionate and really, like I said, scrappy. And so and some of us that were running the company early on were quite a bit younger. And so we maybe didn't really know better. And we had to use anything we could specifically that was free to get our message out there. So you mentioned YouTube, social media. That's obviously something. So 5 years ago when I came on, we had some great video content. Well, it just so happened that our owner, her son, is a really talented product photographer, videographer. So he, for his mom, developed and made and produced a lot of those videos. But when I came on, we didn't have a huge social presence. We didn't even have social media handles. I think we had a Twitter handle, and we had a Facebook page that was just completely inactive. No engagement, no post, no content. So about 5 years ago, I kind of realized that if we were going to get our message out there with limited funds and resources, right, we don't have millions of dollars to throw into marketing and whatnot. So I think I did some research and I connected with an independent contractor guy, and he knew what he was doing. And he's a young guy like me at the time. And we put a strategy together for social media. We went and secured all of our social handles, and then we laid out a 6-month calendar for pushing out content. And we did that, and we grew a bit of a following on Instagram, a little bit on Facebook, and we continued to put out content on YouTube as we could. And from there is really when we realized that we really needed to beef up our website, because at the time, it was a pretty bare bones website. So we invested a bit of money into making a really nice website that really communicated our brand and sort of the feel that we as a small family owned business with a luxury product were trying to get out there. Does that answer your question?
It does. And, you know, I love what you said, because a lot of brands think that they need to have a full-fledged marketing strategy or a full-fledged brand building strategy. But the way you did it was very organic, right? You started off small and you grew it over time and you learned, and then you realized you need the website, and then you just built on top of each other. And that entrepreneurial approach in a very frugal manner, without needing to put a lot of money into it, was is just fantastic to see. So I think it's learning out there for a lot of brands who are trying to grow their business around, you know, you really don't need all those big marketing dollars. You don't really need, you know, to spend a lot on marketing initially, and you can do it in a very scrappy entrepreneurial way.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so among all the channels that, you know, you are on, you know, YouTube, Instagram, et cetera, you know, what's working, what's not, how do you sort of measure success, or how do you measure whether what, you know, whether you should be investing more in that a particular channel or not? Have you been doing that analysis of sorts?
We do. And this is probably a good segue into sort of talking a little bit. I don't mean to jump ahead on your questions to Amazon, but it is super important. So to answer your question, I'm going to start by saying, so early on, we were sort of backwards from a lot of other folks, where we kind of started off on Amazon. We had one built-in wholesale customer, which was Saddleback, and they sold our products on their website. We sold our products on our website, but it accounted for literally about 0.5% a year of our revenue, and all the rest of it was Amazon. What the guy who was in the position before me did, he recognized that, you know, this is about 9 years ago, all the different e-com platforms. And he went out and he got our products out on all the platforms. And I'm talking, when I came on, we had about 15 online marketplaces that we were operating out of: eBay, Etsy, Newegg, Amazon, all these different ones. And so we had a tiny, tiny direct-to-consumer piece of business on our website, which was almost, it's inconsequential, to be honest, at the time. And we had an inconsequential wholesale business. It was 95% of our annual revenue was Amazon. And that was way, you know, like I said, 8-9 years ago. So I attribute a lot of our brand awareness to Amazon. And I hate to say that, because Amazon's kind of the big monster that we love and we hate, and we don't really know how to reconcile that relationship in our minds sometimes. And they're kind of the thorn in our side on a daily basis. But in reality, I've got to give credit where it's due. What we were able to do was put what we felt was a really good product with a good brand in front of a lot of people. And we were able to utilize their advertising platform, because it was at the time pretty user-friendly and easy for someone who wasn't an expert to put some money into it and see some return, and look at your ACoS percentage and work that into your cost of goods and make sure you were making a decent margin. So when I came on, it would be safe to say that all of our eggs were in the Amazon basket, and that made me really nervous. And so my number one goal was to kind of differentiate our business into different sales channels so that we wouldn't be so dependent upon Amazon. And we've been relatively successful doing that. So now that I've kind of laid that platform, I can circle back to your question of which of these channels work and don't work and this and that. And I'll answer that by saying we have, for a lot of different reasons, most of our advertising and marketing budget goes into Amazon's platform for sponsored products and sponsored brands. Just because that's where we have the most experience and where we know the numbers are right there in front of us. We have attempted to put advertising dollars into Google AdWords and boosted posts on social, but in general, we don't spend a single penny anywhere outside of Amazon's advertising platform. The one exception to that would be for our B2B portion of our business. We have some trade shows and we do some LinkedIn stuff just for prospecting with wholesale clients. But outside of that, we don't have any advertising spend outside of the Amazon platform.
Got it. So organic growth strategy outside of Amazon, and then really a lot of investing of marketing dollars on the Amazon platform as well. Have you experimented with Walmart advertising or any of those? Have they been good? eBay? I don't know if you sell on all those other platforms as well, but what's your strategy on these other places?
Yeah, so I'm glad you circled back to that. When I came on, I actually noticed that it was taking our team, it was very inefficient for our team to fulfill the orders from all these 15 other marketplaces because the orders were so sporadic that it actually cost us more and we had a terrible margin simply because we'd have to go and pull out manuals to remember how to even do the fulfillment and if we had a team member change or whatever. So, and that those sales represented such a small amount in the overall picture, I pulled us off of all those platforms except Amazon. And that was a wonderful move that we made, because it reduced the distraction. It allowed us to focus. Now, I know it may sound like contradictory to what I said a moment ago about trying to diversify. Well, what we did is we said e-commerce marketplaces, we want to focus on Amazon, but we need to grow our wholesale and our direct-to-consumer through our website businesses. So that's where the three focuses became when we pulled off all those other marketplaces and we focused on Amazon. We tried Walmart for a minute, and what we realized, we had a wholesale customer, and we didn't even know much about Amazon or about Walmart. This was about 4 years ago. He was placing large wholesale orders, and he wasn't selling on Amazon because we didn't allow that. And he was placing big orders, and then we realized that he was selling through Walmart. Well, we thought, hey, maybe we need to go onto the Walmart platform and sell on Walmart, and we had a good relationship with him. So we just said, you know what, we're going to let you as a wholesale client sell on that platform so that we didn't have to learn a whole new system. That helped grow our wholesale business and keep that relationship intact, and it reduced our distraction from having to learn a whole new e-com platform.
Got it. That makes sense. And I think this is a smart strategy, and it's also based on on insights, on data, on what's working, what's not, fit for your particular brand, et cetera. So it makes a lot of sense. So just to shift gears slightly, talk to me a little bit about just your international strategy as we're talking about different marketplaces. How do you view international as part of your plan? How's that working for you? What's easy? What's been difficult? Touch about international a little more.
Yeah. So we when we look at our data, it was surprising. About 4 years ago, I looked into our analytics and a lot of our data, and I realized that we had quite a decent following in different parts of Europe and Asia, and also Canada. And so I put a little bit of my focus there. Now we put a bunch of resources into launching on Amazon in the UK, and that's a whole long story, as you guys know. And I hope we have time to talk about this because I really wanted to share how important the partnership between us and Etails has been. And maybe we can circle back to that. But what we noticed, we launched in the UK, we did our VAT registration and all that, and we started gaining some traction there. And then I started bringing on wholesale clients in other parts of the world. And it got to the point where I realized that I needed to go over and visit. So last January, I spent about 2 weeks in about 6 different countries all over Europe, just going to visit these sort of early adopters of our product, if you will, who came on as wholesale clients, and they were representing our brand in these countries. And so I went over there, and now this is right in the middle of all the Brexit stuff that was going on. And of course, nobody knew what was happening. And it was a really uncertain time especially for online retailers in different parts of Europe. So we had a lot of traction in Europe specifically and in parts of Asia. And when I got back, we made another big push and started really investing there. Well, long story short, a few different internal things happened. We shifted that focus and we sort of said, hey, we're going to let this international stuff happen organically, as we had in the past. We were running into some challenges with the cost it takes to get the products over there. And we had folks that wanted to be distributors. So now we just added another person into the mix that needs a piece of margin, right? And right. So those were all challenges. And now how do we enforce a MAP price? And we've got pricing situations in all these different countries that are on different currencies. And frankly, just to be honest, it got to be a little bit over my head. but we were still able to facilitate it enough to where we kept the brand alive in those countries, and we supported our retailers, is what we call them over there, our wholesale accounts. And we have a few distributors who buy from us and then sell wholesale, and then their client sells to the end consumer. And we've made that work with different currency exchange and situations like that. But to answer your question in summary, we, especially right now with what's going on, we still focus some brand attention on our international sort of following customers and wholesale accounts just to provide them the support they need. But there's not a huge strategy in place right now for that as far as growth goes.
I see. Got it. Okay. And then how does software play a role in what you do? I know, you know, we've been working with you partially on getting you onto Ad Manager, which is our, you know, ad management software. But how do you look at this software in running your business, right, from inventory management to ad management, et cetera, et cetera? How important does that play a role in how you run your operations?
Yeah, no, it's huge for us. And again, though, as a small family-owned business, we have to be really scrappy and really strategic in what we invest our money into. So when a couple of years after I came on, we started to experience some pretty significant growth. And as you know, it's expensive to grow. And so I realized that we had a little challenge there. We're going to grow at this rate. This growth rate is starting to creep up to our profit margin rate. And we really didn't want to take outside funding. We wanted to fund it internally. And so I realized also that we were going to start to hit some real inefficiencies in our ability to fulfill the growth, whether it was shipping to Amazon for e-tails, ship our own inventory to Amazon, fulfill a direct-to-consumer website order, send a pallet of product to a retailer in Singapore, or whatever the case may be. And so I knew that we needed to scale. I knew that we needed to start putting things in place now, which was a few years ago, to make sure that as the growth continued to happen, that we gained efficiency, not inefficiency. And that's where the technology had to come in. So for example, my sales team, we were prospecting wholesale accounts and using Google calendar for our reminders and Excel spreadsheets, right? We didn't have the resources to go out and get a big enterprise package with Salesforce or whatever, but we did end up bringing on HubSpot and their sales tools that they have in their CRM. That piece of technology allowed us to scale our wholesale side of the business to where we could manage and prospect, you know, over 1,000 accounts each, whereas before it was maybe 100. And then on the inventory side, I mean, we've had to really up our game when it comes to inventory management in the warehouse. And then obviously we've tried different pieces of software, you know, for our Amazon strategy. You know, we've always used Feedback Genius and different pieces of kind of bolt on, if you will, technology for the Amazon platform. We use you guys Ad Manager, which I wish we would have started doing a long time ago. And I always joke with my account reps and all my contacts at e-tails that the common denominator in our relationship, it's been a beautiful partnership, but the common denominator is always us dragging our feet on you telling us what we should do or suggesting what you think we should do. And we drag our feet. And then the moment we flip the switch and let you do it, it always works out, and we kick ourselves for not having done it sooner. So that's definitely what we've experienced with Ad Manager in the last month. And we wish we would have flipped that switch a long time ago.
That's fantastic and really good to hear. And again, you know, I want to emphasize the point you made around, you know, you don't really need expensive enterprise level software to run your business. There are tons of free tools out there. There's tons of cheap software as a service options out there. A lot now that are aligned to pay for performance, like business models as well, that can just help you become more efficient, you know, prospect appropriately, manage your sales funnels, manage your advertisement, you know, and so just really good again to see that you're utilizing all of that. So That's awesome. So just to shift gears a little bit, you know, just thank you for the summary on how you run your business, your strategy. I think it's going to be very useful for a lot of brands listening. But love to just shift gears into talking about current affairs. There's a lot going on in the industry right now as it relates to COVID-19. And so just big picture, how has the current situation affected your business, either positively or negatively? What are you seeing? What are you changing in terms of your strategy right now? Just give us a summary.
Yeah, definitely. So I think right now the most important thing, and I'm hearing a lot of folks talk this way, the negative impact has obviously been one that most of us are facing, right? Where a lot of folks are holding on to their money and they're not buying, specifically in our industry, they're not buying luxury hair products. A lot of folks are laid off, so they don't have the extra cash to do that. Or Amazon, which is a huge revenue channel for us, won't allow us to ship products in. And the product inventory that we have there at the warehouse, they're not shipping it out. They're delaying till right now. I think it's April 23rd or something is what I'm seeing on our product listings for when a prime FBA order will be fulfilled. And so on that hand, it's a very negative impact. It's been a huge blow, but I think where myself and our leadership team here, what gets us excited about this type of thing, and this is a benefit of being small and nimble, is we sort of look at a situation like this and it kind of forces us to get out of our comfort zone, right? It forces us to get back to those roots of being really scrappy and being really creative and trying to figure out, okay, we ran into this challenge today, so what are we going to do about it right now? What can we do? And there's always something that can be done. I think a lot of times the tendency is to just throw our hands up and say, well, Amazon won't let us ship product, then I guess we're screwed, you know? But there's always, if we put our heads together and obviously working with partners like Etails, who also have a lot to bring to the table, we can talk through those things and develop a strategy. Honestly, right now, it's a little soon to know. What we know right now is that we're excited about being forced to get creative and figure out how to get through this together. But at the same time, it has been a blow that we're having to figure out how to work through.
That's right. Yeah. You know, I sent an email to my company yesterday, I think day before, on just explaining to them our response plan to COVID-19. And there was a phrase that I used there which said, you know, hope is not a strategy, taking action is. And we can control what we can control, and we can't control what's happening outside. And so this is the time for you to be innovative. This is the time for you to change strategy. This is the time for us to put our heads together. So exactly what you're saying, you know, is something that I completely subscribe to. And that's exactly right. What brands should be doing is, hey, look, you can control what you can control, and, you know, take control of the situation and figure out how you want to change your strategy and be innovative at this point in time.
Yeah.
And what are some of the things that you are doing internally, strategically? How are you changing strategy? Is it, you know, is it a change in your supply chain strategy? Is it a change in marketing? Kind of where are the areas that you're kind of putting some focus on from an innovative standpoint right now?
Yeah. So honestly, a big thing for us is we realize the partners that we work with are, they have been with most of our partners. And when I say partners, I mean, in general, a lot of our retailers, our wholesale accounts, like you guys who buy wholesale from us, and then you sell to the end consumer, whether that's on Amazon or out of their online store or out of their physical brick and mortar store. We really want to, and that's been a cool thing about the DNA of the company here at Leather Milk, is we just want to do the right thing. And what does that look like? So that's been a lot of our conversation, is like, okay, we're sitting here, everyone's going through a tough time. How do we continue to support our partners and our customers and our employees? And really it's a holistic picture. Now, just to get kind of down into the weeds, like some strategies we have, we're having to figure out, you know, to make things work, how do we keep, if somebody wants to buy our product, how do we make sure they can get it? Now, because Amazon is probably why a lot of folks are listening to this, you know, the moment we found out that Amazon, because at first we were all upset, right? What was it, a couple weeks ago, that they announced that they're not going to be receiving in FBA shipments for non-essential items. So we all, everyone kind of panics, right? Well, we kind of took a step back and took a deep breath, and we all realized, well, we've got quite a bit of inventory there, you know, already. So it's not like sales are going to stop because we can't ship. So we thought, well, we'll just let that inventory continue to sell. Well, then, I don't know, a few days ago, I got word from some different folks and talked with some people on your team and started noticing that they were not only not receiving shipments in, they were starting to significantly delay and throttle shipments of non-essential products going out. And we saw it directly in our sales, I mean, immediately. So our whole strategy was let's let that FBA inventory sell. And then when it sells out, we'll switch on our fulfilled by merchant or seller fulfilled listings. And we have distribution here in house. So we'll just start fulfilling it here. Well, I got a call from an internal guy at Amazon. He says, "Hey dude, you need to go turn on your merchant fulfilled listings now." And I was like, "Well, we have stock at Amazon." And he's like, "It doesn't matter. They're not shipping it. They're throttling it because they don't have the manpower and they have to send the essential goods." So we were able to make that pivot really quickly and switch everything over to merchant fulfilled. I called you guys immediately and said, "Hey, here's what's going on." You guys had already started putting pieces in place to use your 3PL so that you could fulfill outside of Amazon's fulfillment, right? And so that's a good example of how we could have just thrown in our hands up and said, "There's nothing we can do here. Our hands are tied. Amazon won't blah, blah, blah. We can't do anything." But to try and stay on top of it, to try to innovate, think outside the box and realize there's always other options.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other good learning here is, you know, your relationship with Amazon, you know, and of course with us, you know, as retailers, but also, you know, having someone from Amazon be in touch with you and, you know, you having that constant contact there. A lot of brands, you know, look at Amazon as this big enemy. And to me, you know, I completely understand that at some point of, you know, at some level, but I also believe very strongly in partnerships, and it's good for brands to have these strong relationships, even with Amazon, because you can get advice from them as well as to how to run your business on their platform.
Oh, absolutely. Kunal, that's been, I don't know if this has made it to you yet, but if you were to go ask anyone from Etails that's ever met me, I probably borderline annoy them, because anytime I come out to visit you guys in Spokane, or talk on the phone or have a conference call with the various marketing teams and my account manager and all that, I'm constantly like, "Man, this is such a beautiful partnership. What we, I don't know where we would be without you guys because of that support." And this is just I feel like it would do a disservice to you guys if I didn't tell this quick story about the beginning of the partnership on this podcast. Is your sales team was reaching out to us for over a year. And they were trying to set up a wholesale account to buy wholesale and sell on Amazon. And we just didn't allow that. And because, right, so much of our revenue came from Amazon, we were afraid that it would cannibalize our sales. And your sales guys were super chill and really awesome and relational. And they worked with me for a year. And basically, they came around to the conclusion and they helped me see that, no, Aaron, what we've seen happen actually is if you add a second seller, we've actually seen that pie get bigger and both parties start to sell more. And I was like, "Oh, sure. That's what you're telling me because you're the sales guy and you're trying to get what you want." And we ended up launching with you guys and we saw an exponential increase. Now, not only did we see that increase, we didn't realize this at the time, but we gained a whole arsenal of resources and benefits that Etails has to offer. And you guys were very open-handed with all of that from day one, whether it was technology or support from another team or international expansion strategy. I mean, all of the above came on. And that's what I was saying earlier when we kick ourselves here because we everything we've done with eTales, we wish we had done a little bit sooner.
That's really great to hear. And I'm sure my sales team, account teams would love to hear this. That's great feedback. And thank you for that. And
for sure.
So Aaron, what about just how do you think about predictions going forward? How do you think about buying going forward? Will that change your strategy now, just given that there's so much uncertainty in how consumer demand will potentially change or what Amazon is going to do? Like, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. How are you thinking about your prediction models just for the short run, medium term?
Yeah. So obviously the easy, lazy / excuse answer is we just don't know enough yet to be able to do that. But again, that would be the kind of the lazy way out. We have to be thinking about this stuff now, right? Because of the nature of what's going on. So I'll just focus in on this. The main thing that we're walking away from with all of this, and this could be taken the wrong way, but I hope everyone hears what I'm saying, is when I came on 5 years ago, the first thing I recognized was we're too dependent upon Amazon and we need to diversify our business a little bit. We always want to be on Amazon. It would be silly for us to think that we would walk away from such a huge, awesome marketplace with so many customers that have helped us grow. But at the same time, we knew that we needed to launch wholesale and do some international stuff. And we won't go into this now, but we've even launched private label since then. And so we manufacture private label products for brands like Filson, a big brand in Seattle. So we private label those leather care products for them. Now, those were all our attempt to diversify our revenue channels. And so it wasn't all just Amazon. And what this has taught us and shown us is that we need to dive in even harder on that strategy. And I'm not saying take any sales or revenue away from Amazon. I'm saying let's just diversify a bit and move and continue to grow wholesale, continue to grow private label, and continue to grow our direct to consumer while we keep some focus on Amazon, because it is a great revenue channel for us. So really what this has done mainly right now in this moment has driven it home even harder that we need to continue with that previous strategy.
Fantastic. And I think that is coming across also in your conversation right now, is that is a great way to keep a long-term business going. If you are diversified, if you're selling one product on Amazon only, without a true view on a diversified global, potentially global business, you know, then you're just very singularly focused and you add a lot of risk to your business. And so I'm a big fan of diversification as well. And I'm glad to see that you're following that strategy. Well, Aaron, just last question to sort of wrap up for today. Any last minute tips or tricks that you can give brands? What have been some learnings maybe for you outside of what we've already talked about as it relates to, you know, if something like this kicks out, you know, comes back to us in the future, how should brands be better prepared? What are some learnings that maybe you'll take or other brands should take going forward?
Yeah, and I think I hear you asking specifically around the current situation with COVID and how to be better prepared if something like this were to happen. Am I getting you right? Okay,
that's
perfect.
Right.
I think the biggest takeaway for me, and this also applies to my personal life and my personal business that my wife and I own together with some friends, is there's really no reason why a business shouldn't have even more of a safety stock of product and of cash, just to be smart when something like this happens. We're all fortunate that that's there, but we're all looking at ourselves saying, man, this would be a lot easier if we had just upped all of that. And now obviously there's a lot of nuance to that. There's a lot of cost associated with keeping a lot more stock and inventory on the shelves, and But I think things like having backup suppliers and, you know, backup fulfillment, distribution options, like what I loved about what you guys, you already had a relationship with somebody that you could just pick up the phone and flip the switch on with your other 3PLs. And that is incredible to me. And our owner even was like, man, it doesn't surprise me that Etails was already a step ahead of this. And so for us, it's like, let's be better prepared and make sure that we've got great backup suppliers, vendors, great backup distribution methods, extra cash in the bank to get through stuff like this. And then we'll be in a much better place to be a little bit less impacted moving forward should we experience something like this again.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. At the end of the day, cash is king. It's, you know, old school good business practice. Mm-hmm. Cash is king. It's all about cash flow, you know, and businesses that focus on cash and cash flow are going to win in the end. And so, you know, just going back to those basic principles mm-hmm. around good business management and having a focus on cash flow all the time, I think will, you know, get people, you know, through situations like these.
Yeah. But, and I think to take it a step further also is to step back and say, hey, if we're not able to set aside cash, then we might have a deeper root problem on our hands. We need to step back and look and make sure that our margins are good. Because if we don't have the ability to set cash aside for X, Y, or Z, then we need to take a big step back and really look at our overall business strategy to make sure that what we're doing and what we're the revenue that we're bringing in is good money on the bottom line, right? So that we have the ability to have reserves like that. And if not, we need to make a pivot and figure out do we need to go back and renegotiate with raw materials and get our costs down? Do we need to, one of the conversations we're having right now is looking at the profit margin of every channel and saying, well, if this particular channel it has a better margin, then we probably need to put some extra focus there, right? And these are the situations that force us into those uncomfortable conversations and strategies that should have happened before. But now we get to really dive in and do those and make sure that all those things are in place so that we're in a better spot if this ever happens again, right?
That's right. And in fact, Etails did that exercise. So we did that about a year or so back where we did a rationalization across all our channels, across all our vendors, and just to really deep dive and understand the profit profile of each of our different partners. And I highly recommend doing that on a regular basis, you know, for all businesses out there, is just to, you know, keep a pulse on, you know, what's causing you to be a drain, what's not, and really take action and do that on a regular basis to get to the ultimate outcome of cash. So,
yeah.
But Aaron, I thank you so much for being on the show. I really enjoyed this conversation. You know, your insights have been extremely valuable, not only to me, but I'm sure to all our listeners out there. And I know it's a tough time for many listening, but we will get through this. I think it's just important to be innovative, to be ready to change, to pivot appropriately and let the conditions dictate how you want to take action, but more importantly, to take action out there. And so, Aaron, thank you again for being on the show, and it was a pleasure to have you on.
Absolutely. It was an honor. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, listeners, thank you again to another episode of Master the Marketplace, and we will see you again very soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Through conversations with experts in online retail with years of marketing, compliance, and inventory management experience, we seek to empower our listeners to master the marketplace. Thanks for listening. We hope to see you next time on Master the Marketplace with Etails.